I'd like now to welcome Annie Rafter. She is a nurse practitioner with a specialty in women's health, and we are here to talk about winter colds, viruses, diseases, and all the things that happen around the holiday season. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So how much, first of all, are you seeing H1N1 in your practice?
Well, it's hard to tell because the CDC has asked us not to really follow up whether it's H1N1 unless the person gets really sick and is hospitalized. So in the beginning with H1N1, we were testing everybody to see if they had influenza A, because H1N1 is an influenza A, so we could screen for it that way. And they were so overwhelmed by testing that they said, whoa, stop. We're just going to, I mean, for the majority of people, H1N1 is not a big deal. I mean, they get sick, they feel bad, their bodies deal with it. For people who have other kinds of illnesses, like lung disease, asthma, things like that, it's riskier. For the very young and the older people who have, you know, other health issues, it's more of a risk.
And I thought older people were less of a risk on this particular virus because they had immunity to it because some of a virus that had gone around years ago.
Yes, that is true. And it's also true that what happens with H1N1 is not the virus that causes all the problems. It's the body's immune response to it. So people in their 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 40s and 50s and 60s, if they're healthy, are less at risk for both of those reasons. One, they may have been exposed to it in 68 when there was an outbreak. And they may have, their immune system may not be so fired up, and so they don't get the same kind of intense immune response that younger people get. So it's really younger people in your 20s, teens and 20s, who are the most at risk for H1N1.
So their immune system is working faster than ours, let's say,
right,
and therefore
they have a stronger immune reaction, causes the problems.
So what are some of the actual problems that you're seeing in those groups?
Mostly it's lung. Mostly it's associated with the ability to breathe. And there are some other side effects, but mostly the real illness is that you get so much influx of white blood cells and mast cells to the lung that they essentially suffocate.
Good heavens.
On it, which is what makes it so dangerous.
Have you been seeing patients who are in that position?
No. Not in my practice. I've not seen anybody yet. I'm knocking on wood.
Knocking on wood here in the big
company. I've had
some
people who are pretty sick, and we figured out it probably was H1N1, but we've managed to, you know, get them through that without their being, you know, hospitalized or that really sick. And the key thing with H1N1 is to recognize that if you're feeling sick, if you get the flu and it's acting like a regular flu, even though you have some chest congestion, you just treat it the way you would treat a regular flu, but you pay attention. And, you know, if you're somebody who has asthma or has some lung disease, or you have other illnesses like diabetes that is not well controlled, or, you know, any really kind of chronic medical illness, then you probably ought to get to your doctor right away. But otherwise, treat it like the flu, act like it's the flu. As long as you can breathe, you're doing okay. If you start having trouble breathing, if you feel short of breath, or your fingernails start turning blue, or you know you're not thinking quite clearly, and again, that's having other people around you who notice that kind of thing, then just go to the emergency room.
Fingernails turning blue is a respiratory symptom?
Yeah, you're not getting enough oxygen in your blood system, and so your fingernails turn blue when you don't have enough oxygen in your blood.
So people wearing opaque nail polish, you can rub that right off. So H1N1, I mean, I have to say, I and a number of people I know had bouts of that right, really before the flu season started, mm-hmm. and it was very easy. Mm-hmm. It was easier than the common cold because mm-hmm. the main symptom was great fatigue. You go to bed, a few days later it's gone.
Mm-hmm. And as long as you're healthy and that's your response, that's great. And that's what it's turning out to be, the response for the vast majority of us. The people for whom it's not the response and they do get lung things, it can be life-threatening.
Now, you in your practice also have to just deal with the variety of ailments that happen when the weather is cold. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's exacerbated at holiday times. because of stress, because mm-hmm. of people traveling, people being in airplanes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, stress is a major issue. When you're particularly stressed, one of the first things that happens is your immune system is compromised. So you're more likely to pick things up. And what stress actually is it's a biochemical change in your body that's built in as a fight or flight reaction for our ability to get out of a life-threatening situation. And but we're meant to go through those, we were designed originally by nature to go through those episodes and then be able to sit around the fire and talk to each other about it and go, wow, I couldn't believe what happened, and get over it, you know, and process that out, and then our biochemistry goes back to normal. But we're under the kind of stress, I like to call it the stress of affluence. You know, most of us, some of us are worried about where we're going to get our next meal, especially with this economic situation, but most of us have a place to live and enough food to eat, that kind of thing. But we're stressed by trying to do too much. You know, it's like we have all of this stuff available to us, and we're trying, we think that because it's available, we should be able to access it all and do it all. And so we don't really have the downtime to reshift that internal biochemistry. And of course, Christmas, it's like, I mean, the holidays, it's not just Christmas for us, it's the holidays is do, you know, and traveling and getting all the presents and doing all, you know, the cards and whatever that people do. It's like it amps it up. And I believe that what goes on in a community of people happens, you know, affects everybody. So I noticed that, you know, I'm not traveling this Christmas and I'm feeling kind of calm about it and, you know, easy. And I'm feeling this amp around me. I'm aware of the sort of the energies amped up this time of year. And so it's kind of stressful. And that affects our immune system. The other thing I was talking to somebody about today is that increased intake of sugar affects our internal biochemistry as well. And of course, that's something that happens over the holidays is we're all eating much more sugar
cake
than we would normally be
cookies.
Eating. Cookies, candy, that kind of thing, presents people give or sweets. And it's what we do. But that also increases the stress, the biochemical stress in our system. And some people tolerate it fine and other people don't. And so it's, you know, knowing, it's recognizing in yourself, watching your patterns, but just keeping aware that if you tend to get sick over the holidays, it may very well be the added stress of all the sugar.
There is also, I don't know if you can speak to this, but there is a stress, I think, associated with media, like having a TV on a lot, things like that. That
electromagnetic
enters your system.
Stress. Yeah, and years ago, I was looking for the centralizing construct for Western medicine. You know, Ayurvedic has Pitta, Vata, Kapha. Acupuncture has the meridian system. And Western medicine really more is a decentralizing construct. It's like take it apart, see what works. But I see that as being dangerous for people because if I give you an antibiotic, for instance, I have to know how that's going to affect your whole system. If I'm being conscientious with you and if we're going to maintain your health. So I was looking for that, and what I came up with the help of some other people was that the construct of assimilation. So how do we take things, first of all, how do we know we need something for our body? Then how do we take that in? How do we break it down to its component parts, take what we need for our well-being, and get rid of what we don't need? And the media, that's a huge issue because we're getting information all the time, and we don't really have the time to break that down. What does that all mean?
Right.
And there have been plenty of studies done that people who consistently watch the news have an impaired immune system because it's a stressor.
That is so interesting.
It's a huge stressor. If you don't know how to deal with the information you're getting, what do you do with that?
Well, there's also, I mean, one of the, something I was reading was saying that a great stressor is not having control in your life. So somebody working on an assembly line or in a job where they've got one or more bosses is actually more stressed out than the CEO of the company who, although they have a great deal more responsibility, has less stress because they have control over their own time and over the decisions that are made.
Yeah, I saw that program, and I think it's true that if you have the sense, if you have the what can be illusion, that you have control over your life, then there's less stress in that aspect of your life.
But then if you're looking at the programs about healthcare reform or all these things that you really don't have control over, no matter how
hard
you try.
I think control is an illusion. And I think that every spiritual program there ever was says it's letting go of the delusion that you have to be in control of your life. But that's a whole other conversation.
Very interesting. We're talking to nurse practitioner Annie Rafter. So you do allopathic medicine. You're a nurse practitioner trained in allopathic medicine. Here in Santa Fe, a lot of people use and demand herbal medicine and other traditions, as
right.
you've
really
just mentioned.
What my practice is functional medicine. So it's a combination of allopathic, where I think that's necessary. And I use a lot of herbs, and I use a lot of alternative things in my practice as well. So it's looking at how our bodies function. It's like one of the treatments I have for flu is a vitamin, IV vitamin, combined vitamin and mineral IV that seems to be very effective against viral infections. And so it's not a prescription. I try really hard. I write a lot of prescriptions, but I try really hard not to. I try really hard to do it with what we call nutraceuticals that are natural products instead.
How can you, as a nurse practitioner, and we as people trying to stay healthy, make sense of the whole world of herbal medicine? For example, there was a study that showed that echinacea really doesn't do anything, and then people swear by echinacea, and there's a lot of things like that. The studies haven't been done, or maybe they have sometimes, or maybe the studies come to a conclusion that doesn't match with what your patients say.
Well, I mean, one of the problems with evidence-based medicine, and I'm not saying here that I object to evidence-based medicine, because I think it's really, really helpful to look at what are we doing. I mean, I think it's one of the best things that Western medicine does, is we look at what we're doing to see if it really works. But the problem with it, if you're looking at it from a quantum physics standpoint, is that what the tester expects is often what they get. And so if you have somebody doing the research who thinks that herbs are bunk, then you're likely to get a result that herbs are bunk. The problem with herbal medicine is that it doesn't make the kind of money, although it does make a fair amount of money, it doesn't make the kind of money that pharmaceutical medicine is making. And so there isn't the money there or the desire, really, to study these things because they're not patentable. So it's word of mouth. It's like, this helped me, so you try it, you know, let me try this. And in some ways, it really is, when you're approaching keeping yourself healthy during the winter time, it's really kind of word of mouth. Echinacea works great for some people. It doesn't work well for other people. I like astragalus root, because astragalus root is a adaptogenic, and you can push your immune system too hard, and that's what the autoimmune diseases are, is they are an overactive immune system.
Like allergies.
Lupus, MS, there are a lot of lichen sclerosis, ectropicus, they're just, you know, hundreds of these autoimmune diseases that are really from an overactive immune system that's attacking itself because of changes. We think that what's happening is that there are changes in the chromosome. The chromosome is damaged by toxins in our bodies. And then the body doesn't perceive that chromosome as itself anymore, and so it attacks it. But it often happens to people who have a very active immune system. So
what chromosome are you talking about? I mean, every cell has a chromosome.
It can be any of the whole line of chromosomes.
But I mean, when you say there are changes in your chromosomes of one whole organ,
it's called a SNP, and it's damage to a particular chromosome that tells it one part of your body to do a specific thing.
But I mean, a chromosome is one of many chromosomes in a cell.
Chromosomes are basically the book of your DNA, and when your body is triggered to do a certain thing, it's picking what page out of that book is going to be read.
Right, but every single cell in your body has the same book.
Right.
And so when one of them gets damaged in one cell,
it affects the whole body.
More on that another time.
That's a whole other conversation.
Yeah. What do you recommend for people to stay healthy so that they don't even have to go into the doctor during the winter?
A couple of things. I think it's really wise to use some sort of nutraceutical, some sort of herbal approach. If you're traveling, if you know you're particularly stressed, things like I'm moving, somebody in my family has died, good stress like I'm getting married, these kinds of things can decrease your immune system. And often in times like this, you're around crowds of people, and the more people you're around, the more likely you are to be exposed to a virus or a bacterial infection. So things like echinacea or astragalus root or, there are hundreds of them out there, to take before you travel. I particularly like a substance called Wellness Formula that's made by Source Natural. It's a combination of garlic and other herbs, and it's just this fortuitous combination of herbs they've come up with. It works really well. And it's great to take if your symptoms begin. It's not so effective, I don't think, as a long-term thing. The body gets used to it. But if you're traveling or if you're really stressed and you know you're going to be around a lot of people, it's a great thing to take like 3 tablets of that 3 times a day just while you're traveling. And often it'll prevent you from getting sick. Also, there are any number of Chinese herbals that are particularly good for prevention of these kinds of things that you can take. At the first sign of the slightest, you know, you start getting that kind of scratchy feeling in your throat. If you do it then, often they work. Liquid iodine, you know, we think of iodine as being poisonous.
You put it on your cuts.
Yeah, you put it on your cuts. But you can get liquid iodine now that's called Lugol's solution at the health food stores. And a couple of drops of that in a glass of water on your throat when you're traveling will prevent you from picking things up. So there's a lot of preventative things that can help. And, you know, if you don't know specifically what they are, most of the health food stores have a list of them, and you can talk with people there. Pharmaca's really good about that. They have practitioners there, and they can help.
What if you actually start coming down with something?
There are a number of approaches to that. There's a homeopathic called Oscicillium that if you take it as soon as you begin to get symptoms, it can help people. Some people it works great for. Any of these things, some people it works great for, some people it doesn't. So you have to kind of hunt and
can
shop.
You tell by examining somebody who is going to be a better candidate for this or that remedy?
No, unfortunately not.
You just have
not.
To spend your money.
Yeah,
and
it's kind of trial and error so far. I wish I could. That would be great. Then if you really start coming down with it, you can do something like Wellness Formula. And Wellness Formula, when you're feeling sick, is 3 tablets every 3 hours. So it's really a lot. You got to be able to tolerate garlic to do that. And then if you get sick, we have an intravenous called Myers Formula that we give. And there are a couple of other people in town who are doing it as well. And it's an IV of calcium, magnesium, vitamin C, B5, B6, B12, and B complex.
Now, all those things are in the supplements that a lot of people take
right.
every morning.
Right.
What's so good about getting it intravenously?
Because if you take it every morning, you don't get the dosage that you get when it's intravenous. It's just your body doesn't let it get that high in your bloodstream.
So it has a natural filtering mechanism.
It has a natural filtering mechanism and won't let you get those kinds of levels in what we call a bolus, all at once in
right.
the bloodstream. And by doing this intravenous, and it's a push, it's not a drip, and it goes in, you know, depending on your response to it. And when you're taking it, you get a kind of a hot flash in the area where the infection is. For flu, it will pretty much stop it in its tracks if you get it in the first 24 to 48 hours of having the flu. Colds, it takes 2 of them to really shorten the cold and get you over it. But people are coming to me after being sick for 6 weeks, and with the Myers formula, it doesn't last more than a week.
Very interesting. Annie Rafter is a nurse practitioner specializing in women's health. We're talking about Christmas holiday, winter-related health issues. And if people want to contact you, how should they do that?
My phone number is 984 8262. My receptionist is named Joe. We do general. I do limit my practice to women, but for flu and things like that, I'm also treating men for that. We're not being restrictive.
And children as well.
And children. Well, I haven't done it a lot in little children. I think anybody 10 years old or older. Younger than that, kids respond differently. And also, small children don't like IVs. So
yeah, so they should go to pediatricians.
Yeah, they need to see their pediatrician.
Anything else that you want to let people know about?
Well, I think probably, and this may sound easy to say and hard to do, but I think that when we have the idea of how our lives ought to be, and it's something that we don't have that we want our parents to behave a certain way, we want our sisters and brothers to behave a certain way around the holidays, we want certain gifts, our well-being has to do with what somebody else does. That's the major stressor for the holidays. And if we can practice, and I think it really is sort of a spiritual practice, to let that go, to look at what we have been given and what is working, the good things about our parents and our brothers and sisters and our family, that lowers the stress level. And it really makes it possible to get through the holidays in a completely different way and a much healthier way.
Practicing gratitude.
Exactly. And watching what you eat and how much you drink and all of that stuff is biochemistry. It all affects our bodies biochemically. And when our bodies are affected biochemically, then that changes our immune system and our ability to fight off these things.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you very much for being here and wish you very happy holidays, Christmas, New Year.
You too.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe, and we're going to go out with just a little piece of Dvorak's New World Symphony.